Attention all lifelong learners and technology enthusiasts. Tune in to By the Way, the radio show that will help keep you informed and engaged with the latest in education and technology. Don't miss out on this exciting opportunity to expand your knowledge and stay informed about the world around you. Tune in to By the Way and join the conversation today with Michelle Perry, owner of Learn New Mexico.
Tune in to By the Way the first Thursday each month at 8 a.m. right here on KHII 88.9 FM Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and KEDU 102.3 FM Ruidoso. And good morning. It is time for that By the Way program, and here's your host, Michelle Perry.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
How are you today?
You know me, mean and honoring, and having a good time.
I'm always walking in here open for the best stories out of you.
Can I take over Jared's payment?
No, you know, for as mad as he gets at me for not giving him his medicines in the way that he wishes, as frequent as he wishes, he might like that. Yeah. You guys could have some fun, and you just dole them out to him, no willy-nilly. Just...
Well, no, I'd make him suffer. I got a pew-pew, so he'll behave.
There you go. There you go.
Who's your guest this morning?
So I have Jesslyn Ratliff with me today. Jesslyn Langley. I still call her that because when I met her long ago,
that was her name.
And today she's Jesslyn Langley and has been for many years. But my brain. So welcome, Jesslyn.
Thank
How are you?
You? I'm so happy to be here. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Awesome. And so I'm having you today, number one, because we have known each other for a while now, and I have admired all of your hard work that you have done in higher education. And number two, I want to hear about your thoughts regarding higher education, and I want to hear about your perception of how well higher education's working towards meeting the needs of our modern day students. So when I say higher education, I'm talking about college, right? We're talking about any kind of college beyond secondary level, beyond the 12th grade. And so you have a lot of experience. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your history, especially as it relates to higher education and professional career-wise?
Yeah, so I actually started my higher education career at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces. And the beginning of my professional experience over there was helping international graduate students get into the water science management program and get them over here to the United States in a way that they had funding, that they could work with a professor and do their research. So that was the beginning, and then I transitioned over to TRIO, Student Support Services, and that program is wonderful. It's funded by the Department of Education, and that allowed me to serve first-generation, low-income, and disabled students. And so that allowed me to really dig into the co-curricular program of peer mentoring and also peer tutoring. But the research that I was able to do during that time really showed me the benefits of connecting our students with mentors in the program that they're studying. And then after that, I decided to come back to where I grew up. And so I moved over to New Mexico State University, Alamogordo. it was a different experience for me because I had never worked at a community college before. And so that really allowed me to understand non-traditional students better, but it also allowed me to recognize the needs of, you know, the population here in Otero County. It's not the traditional student that you serve at main campus. And so that program here at NMSUA was a Title V Developing Hispanic Serving Institutions project. And that really allowed us to look at what is an HSI, Hispanic Serving Institution, and what does that mean? What are we going to do because we're an HSI? We can't just call ourselves an HSI. We actually have to do. We have to serve the students that are Hispanic in our community. So that's been my latest experience. I've been really fortunate to work alongside professionals to understand those students who are underrepresented and how we can best serve them in a way that helps them succeed.
it sounds to me, which all that is amazing. I just adore all that. Because, but it does sound to me that there's a common theme that runs through all of your experiences, and that is that your programs, your services were always student-driven, meaning that you take the student's needs and you make them the priority versus wrapping the program around the student. You put the student with the correct kinds of supports and program, making it tailored to their needs. The international students, I bet that was so interesting, and getting to deal with the different cultures that would come to the campus, and getting to witness firsthand their perceptions and their experiences, and getting to give them the opportunity to have their questions answered, have their interests served. And then of course TRIO, that's a program near and dear to my heart, because when I was with the schools, we worked also with TRIO, and such an amazing program, putting kids, connecting kids who otherwise would not necessarily consider college, in general, putting them together with that. And then I love what you said about the peer mentoring and getting to know about how that peer mentoring support is so necessary. So in your perception around student-driven services, what can be done better holistically, large scale, through a large kind of lens, with higher education, in your expertise, to make sure that we're targeting students' needs and making sure they stay with their program and complete their program?
Yeah, so if you would have asked me that 4 years ago, my answer would have been totally different than it is now because of the pandemic. I was challenged greatly after the pandemic to understand the needs of our students. Before the pandemic, I was confident. I had a sense of what our students needed. I had a sense of what services and resources that we could provide to them. Post-pandemic, I really was kind of questioned. I didn't know how to move forward as far as serving especially non-traditional students. And so one thing that I have learned over the last couple of years is that our students need and want flexibility. It's a different learning environment today than it was 3 to 4 years ago. If you look around, not only students want flexibility, everybody does. You can see a lot of people quitting their jobs to find remote work jobs where they can stay at home. It's just a common thing right now, and our students are no different. So you think about the flexibility that students want. So if you're a student who is trying to get your education, but you work full-time, or you work part-time, or you have children, or you have other commitments, you need that flexibility. There's no question. And so my opinion is that gone are the days where a class should be at a certain time, at a certain place, and you have to be there or not, or you fail. And that I just don't feel like that's serving the students the best these days. And so lately I had been exploring and researching the high flex model. So high flex is a combination of hybrid and flexible. It's not a new concept. It's been around for over a decade. But when the pandemic came around, a lot of institutions went to the high flex model because it allowed them to open up their classrooms still to students who wanted to be there in person. But it also provided a remote option for the students who wanted to be at home, or maybe they're at work and they're on their lunch hour, or they're taking a break at work, and they could still join the class without having to drive to the actual campus and go sit in a classroom. And, there are some professors who would argue, well, then why can't I just have one class for remote students and then one class for in-person? Why do I have to combine them? And that's a great question. So there are some colleges, and I would say particularly community colleges, who maybe don't have the faculty staff to sustain, one section of online and one section of in-person. And so they have to do a hybrid or high flex option. And I think that with the right training, the right technology, it can absolutely be done in a way that the students get a good learning experience, no matter if they're remote or sitting in the classroom.
such an interesting paradigm, you know, that we're not talking about like brand new, you know, things that have never been seen before. What we're talking about is making education very relevant to the needs and interests of the people we serve. And I mean, that in itself is admirable, because we want as many people to participate in learning their entire life as possible. And that means a lot of different things for a lot of different people, and we want that for everyone at any stage of their life. This high flex model, though, I love this, that we've actually put a name to this. Mm-hmm. And you know, this type of teaching, you know, because I'm an educator, and as I come at this with my own lens, I'm thinking about what does it take to train educators, professors, instructors to teach in this method, to be able to teach this flexible model in which they are attending to folks online as well as folks who are face to face. And what kinds of trainings and development do you think are absolutely necessary? Because this is a different way of teaching, right? So what kinds of trainings and models are you feeling is necessary for these instructors in order to achieve this?
So the biggest question that I have when I think about that is, how are you going to ensure that every student has a positive learning experience? You want their learning to be equitable, right? You don't want your students who are remote to get a lesser education because they're not sitting in the classroom. So I think the key is to train the faculty, of course, and give them the option to set up the classroom in a way that they think will best serve their class, right? So, for example, if a professor is teaching a sociology class, they're probably going to want a lot of community building, a lot of discussion, a lot of groups. And so how are they going to make sure that those remote students don't fall off and disengage and, you know, don't feel a part of the community? And so that would impact the way that their classroom is set up technology-wise. And so I think that that's the key. Ask the professor, what is it that you need for your class to succeed? And then set up the classroom in a way that works. The great thing now is that this setup is viable now because almost all universities and colleges, they upped their game when it came to technology during COVID, right? Pre-COVID, this wasn't needed. They just expected students to be there in person, and that's that. Well, COVID pushed us forward in the world of technology and said, okay, we need to have Zoom available. We need to have classrooms set up where they're Zoom capable with cameras and microphones and a lot of other things that are out there. But now that we have those institutions set up with that technology, that's why I think that this is viable. And so a professor would just, you know, need some training to understand how to manage two cohorts at one time and how to make them work together, and then figure out a way to set up their classroom that enhances that. And asking students to work together is, you know, not new. It's just a different way of working together.
So we're really challenging, I think, our instructors, professors, those who are tasked with this job of reaching all these students to reconsider their pedagogy. And so when we think about pedagogy, we know there are best practices to get high levels of engagement from your students. Because if your students aren't engaged, and this goes for anybody in education, your students aren't engaged, they're not learning. And so how best, you know, to get your students engaged, and then when you have virtual students and face-to-face students, how best to get them engaged. But it comes back to the pedagogy of using best practices such as student engagement. There's a whole slew of tricks and tips that, you know, anybody can use to get students engaged. And I love, love, love that you said technology, because this segues into my most favorite topic in the entire world, is how to use technology to enhance engagement, but also to work smarter, not harder. Mm-hmm. I'm a big smarter, not harder fan. So anytime you can streamline efforts and streamline your content, instructional efforts, your strategies, streamline them, then that's going to be the best. And so utilizing technology to do that, to make your strategy happen for everybody, mm-hmm. utilizing your technology. That does take a certain kind of knowledge and skill set. And so in my experience working with educators across the state, including higher education, I'm seeing that they're just blown away by the possibilities of technology as a strategy, as a tool to increase engagement. And so one example of that is, artificial intelligence. You know, I mean, I could talk for 100 years about AI and just showing teachers how to use AI and platforms out there that make their life easier, smarter, not harder. It watching their reactions, and that they're blown away, like, oh, I don't have to create a lesson plan from scratch. I don't have to, try to align objectives to activities by myself anymore. I can just plug that into, Magic AI or CuriePod or whatever, and it does it for me. Mm-hmm. That's it blows them away. But so, having said all that, there's lots of things we can talk about regarding technology and how campus, especially in MSUA, is utilizing technology. Talk to us about the integration of technology in helping these students and educators engage.
Okay. Yeah, so, like I mentioned earlier, NMSUA was fortunate to get a Title V Developing Hispanic Serving Institutions grant in 2020. That grant allowed NMSUA to purchase Oculus goggles to create a virtual reality lab. It's called the Aggie Eye Lab. It's here in Alamogordo on campus, and it allows the students to have a different learning experience. And so it is one of those things that has to be learned, right? The faculty have to engage and learn how to use it as a teaching tool. And once they do, it can be very effective in allowing the students to explore their program of study in a different way than they ever have. But also explore their career field that they're interested in and figure out if it's really something that they want to do. One of the benefits of virtual reality on our campus, too, is bringing students together. And it's a fun thing. It's a learning thing, but it's fun. And the students come together to learn about, there's so many different programs. They can learn about whatever they're studying or languages or travel. And there are some students who, have never been outside of New Mexico, and they have an opportunity to explore other countries through VR. And it's an amazing tool for professors and students. But I think that it just goes along with what I talked about earlier. If we did high flex, it's all about training. If you don't know how to use the tool, it probably won't be effective, or you might leave some students out. And so I think it's all about just educating the community that will be using it and making sure that they understand the benefits of it and having that discussion evolve of like, well, what more can we do with it?
I love that you segued right into the professional development need because, as you know, listeners may not, but you know, I am finishing my PhD and my research has been all targeted around how to support educators with effective professional development in the use of this immersive virtual reality. So, the idea of putting an Oculus Quest on and, interacting with a virtual environment, whether it's in Paris or whether it's, some type of language app or, the possibilities are endless. But it really is important that educators get a sense of how to use this tool effectively, and it doesn't become some kind of novel gadget. And that's been my mission, is to figure out my research, which I conducted in that lab, and it has concluded. But my research all steered around how to best do that, how to best prepare educators for the use of this tool. And I have to say, I ran a lot of people through that lab, a lot of educators between Alamogordo and Cloudcroft through that lab. And so when we say that it's an Aggie Eye Lab, we also mean it's a legit learning lab. Like, that place provided a foothold for our research. And so the findings of that research has indicated that we must orient educators in a very explicit way in how to utilize the device first and foremost. This is how to do it, like the logistics, like, you know, put it on like this, and then you put it in the cabinet and charge it like that, and logistics. And then secondly, it's asking them to self-reflect on how it can support their content. And so that's what I heard over and over again during the research qualitatively is, hey, this is great, but how does this support my content? And then showing them the apps. Okay, so this app would align here, and this app would align here. And there's a million apps in the Oculus. And so that was proven that they needed that. But just the experience itself as an intervention, providing them an opportunity to look at three educational apps, which was the research, and then giving them an opportunity to gauge their perception of the usability and ease of use of that device, that alone caused educators to be more in agreement to utilize the device than not. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is that the research succeeded in showing us that just orienting them and giving them an opportunity to experience immersive virtual reality is enough to launch them toward a perception of that they want to use the device. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about professors and instructors in higher education, a lot of times we're talking about people who are not so interested in adapting to modern technology. I mean, not all. I mean, I know some instructors who are like, woohoo, let's do it. But I also know some that are reluctant. And so I guess what I'm trying to say then is that just by experiencing it, just by walking through the experience, a guided experience, you're going to want to use it more. And so just giving that opportunity a chance. So go up to the lab, because it's staffed. It's staffed by the TIDAL program, and it's also staffed by Studio G. So it's staffed by two programs. It's in the ProTech building. Go up there. If you are an instructor, or even if you're just a member of this community who wants to check this out, go up there, because the experience alone of putting yourself in that headset, walking through a few apps in a guided, facilitated way, you're gonna see the benefit. So, you know, having said all that, talking about technology and talking about, you know, the wonderful benefit it has, how do you see the future? I mean, you know, we know that we're ever evolving in education and with technology, and educational technology evolves in pace with technology. How do you see the future of higher education in not only in our state, but just globally?
It's so different. It's really amazing as to what is available to students now. And they can get an education anywhere from anywhere. And so I think that I'm going to go back to what I said a little earlier is flexibility. I think it's just going to continue to get more and more flexible for somebody to get an education. Not only that, I do think that there's this new era that is not the same as it used to be. It's not so as important as it was to get associate, bachelor's, master's, PhD. You know, I think that there's so many more opportunities now that we call micro learning. So these days you can get badges. You can get little certificates here and there that really help up your resume when you're applying for jobs. So gone are the days, I think, that you have to pay for a four-year education to be able to get a good job. Not that I don't think education is important. I will forever support higher education and encourage people to take advantage of that. But what I'm saying is that as you do that and as you work towards a degree, get other things. Get a micro-credential. You know, some of them are only 3 to 6 weeks long, and you can have something to stamp on your resume and say, I know this. I know this program, or I know this process. And I think that those really help boost people's skill sets. And that's what employers are looking for today. But also, I think that there's going to be a more focus on soft skills. One thing that we hear from employers all the time is that they can find people who are smart and who know how to do the job technically, but they don't have soft skills. So when we say that, we mean critical thinking, communication, And so we really need to up our game in higher education. Do micro-credentials in communication. Do a micro-credential in critical thinking. You know, get those students what they need so that they can put that on their resume, but actually take it to the career field.
I love that you said all that, because I also inherently agree with that big promoter of lifelong learning. I don't care if you're 16 or 106. If you're learning, you're enjoying life. And if we couch learning in flexible ways, then we are going to be able to meet more needs, and we are going to be able to promote that education for our people, for all of our people in our community. And so we're rounding the corner here. I'm getting the signal from Mike, but I do want to reiterate that flexibility in provisions of education is key.
Yeah.
And all of us who are trying to work so hard in redesigning and revamping and reimagining how to approach education as it were in a modern age, you're right. Yeah. Flexibility is the key word. Jesslyn, I really appreciate you being here today. You bring a wealth of knowledge and experience, and thank you so much for allowing us insight into those thoughts. And thank you. And I hope that this was fun for you as well.
It was. Thank you, Michelle. I could talk about higher ed all the time. So.
Me too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Attention all lifelong learners and technology enthusiasts. Tune in to By the Way, the radio show that will help keep you informed and engaged with the latest in education and technology. Don't miss out on this exciting opportunity to expand your knowledge and stay informed about the world around you. Tune in to By the Way and join the conversation today with Michelle Perry, owner of Learn New Mexico.
Tune in to By the Way the first Thursday each month at 8 a.m. right here on KHII 88.9 FM Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and KEDU 102.3 FM Ruidoso.